The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have a busy show around town today. Josh Weinfuss, Cardinal reporter, ESPN. After 3 weeks, what a make out of what happened yesterday. Yesterday was just an odd game. Spurge is over at the Suns Media Day. That's right. Today is the first day of Suns Media Day. It's the first time that James Jones and Monty Williams have talked about Robert Sarver. And also this Jay Crowder story that came out over the weekend, that Jay Crowder will not be at camp. That Jay Crowder wants out of the Suns. So is it the good ship Suns or not? So Spurge is there. And then John Wilner will be with us. Wilner Hotline. As always, John Wilner joins me every Monday. We're going to get into some Arizona State Sun Devil coaching candidates. We're going to get into the Pac-12 because I believe there's at least four schools that are ranked in the top 15, which Pac-12. And do we have a couple Heisman Trophy candidates in the Pac-12? What happened to U of A over the weekend? I'm going to get a couple names in with John on the ASU coaching search, a couple of current sitting Pac-12 coaches. We'll get into all that with John Wilner. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their support. Had a great weekend. Son made it into a game Friday night, into his football game at his high school. I've talked to you about my son and how it's been a journey for him. He's had a couple of major surgeries, and he had a sense of normalcy. It's his senior year. He's rehabbing. He's still not quite 100%. They put him out on the field, came off, hugged his coach, put it up on my social. It was just a great moment. Got asked to go to homecoming, went with the girl to homecoming, had a great time at homecoming. It's like normal stuff for a dad, right? That's what I want. All for my kids. I want my friends' kids. I want people to have a sense of normalcy. And so it was a good weekend. Watched a lot of college football. I went to the Arizona State game. I was there as they introduced the fans before the players because there was nobody in the stadium. I'm just kidding. They didn't really introduce the fans before the play, but there was really nobody there. Like, there are high school games that there are probably more people at Saguaro Chandler than were at the Arizona State football game on Saturday night. That's just where the program is right now. So, and you can't make too much out of Sean Aguana one way or another. I know that there are people in my industry that think he has no shot in hell of getting the job. And I look at it and say, you know, if the NCAA notice of violations comes down and it's bad, then why would a sitting coach at a Pac-12 school, why would any name of value come here for a couple of years if there's loss of scholarships and bowl bans? Why would they? It's my understanding there's still some investigating that's going on, that this crew has actually come back and dove back into a couple of things here in recent weeks, which I find interesting. So if you're Sean Aguano and you do the right things, which is you went out before the game and you offered a running back over at Williams Field High School who was at the game, down in the end zone, the kid cried, put it up on his social. Williams Field's head coach, Steve Campbell, was a quarterback, a very good quarterback at Arizona State. It's just not that hard to go out in the community and be serious and sincere, not fake and phony or don't believe in local kids. It just is. So I thought that was a great move on Sean's part. Wherever I went this weekend, the people that are in the coaching circles really are rooting for Sean Aguano in one way or another. Either he gets the job at ASU, which is a long shot. I'll get that. Or he is retained on the staff, the new staff, and just moves right along with what he's doing. So, you know, what happened on Saturday night? A lot of the same old stuff in some regard. Another regard, brought back some tradition, the Sun Devil Walk. I think that's cool. It's not for me at least, it's not about what happens in 60 minutes against Utah or what happens against USC this week or what happens the following week against Washington, which, by the way, that was just announced as a 1 p.m. kickoff on an October afternoon. That'll be great. It is about what is going on off the field. Because, look, transfer portal is going to be huge for whoever comes here. We're coming into a new era now of bounce back. used to be the trend was, I want to get out of Arizona. It's too hot. Man, I go to Seattle, or I go to Eugene, or I go to fill in the blank, and it's just so nice, and it's all this passion and enthusiasm and all these fans, so on, so on, so on. And then ASU, because they did such a piss poor job of recruiting these local kids to begin with, those kids, when they did go into the portal, had no interest in coming back here. What I'm seeing in just a week's period of time is there's some players that are at other schools with ties to the Valley that are now saying, you know, I love Coach Aguano. He sincerely recruited me. The people that didn't are no longer there. And maybe I should be considering ASU to bounce back to. I think that's going to be a new trend. I really do. It doesn't mean that's how you build up a program, but look at Washington. You know, Penix, their quarterback's a Heisman Trophy candidate. He was in Indiana, of all places. And now he goes to Washington. He's with his position coach who's up there. I was watching Cameron Ward at Washington State on Saturday, the quarterback from Incarnate Word. His guy came along with him. And so there's this relational deal. I want to talk to John about this, John Wilner, because I see this as a new trend of let's get the quarterback, but then let's bring his coordinator from a smaller school along with him to make sure that our investment is taken care of. And oh, by the way, now we're building that player up, that coaching ability to go from Incarnate Word to the Pac-12 to wherever it may take him. I mean, it's smart. So I took in a lot of college football on Saturday. Yesterday was, just a weird Cardinal game. Like Kyler having 58 pass plays and the inability to run the football because they fell behind again. And James Conner's just not doing much this season. And defensively, I've said it all August during the fake season of I don't care what goes on here in August. When it gets to September, I need to see Isaiah Simmons and Zaven Collins be on the field. Now, Zaven got dinged up, but we're not seeing two former first-round picks on the field making plays every single play. We're not. And that's a problem. Once again, we go back to production in the draft very early on this season. I'm very tired of, well, if DeAndre Hopkins were here, things would be different. I can't buy that. Would they be that much different? I mean, they're very lucky to have beaten the Raiders. They're very fortunate to just be sitting here at 1-2. And the game at Carolina this Sunday, it's already in the path of the hurricane. Like, they're going to fly into bad field conditions this coming Sunday. So if you can't run the football, you're in trouble, okay? So I'm not one of those that's like, good ship, Cardinals, everything is all great and hunky-dory. I am not that. Yeah, the NFL is a long season, and things can turn on a switch, but Matthew Stafford outrushed Kyler Murray? How's that possible? That can't happen, but it did. So that's where I'm at on the Cardinals. Media day for the Suns is today, and Jay Crowder said over the weekend that he doesn't want to be here. He's not going to report to camp. The team put out a statement. Jay Crowder is one of those guys you love when he's on your team. You need to have Jay Crowders. You need to have grit guys. But Jay Crowder has had stops around the league. And maybe he's just one of those guys that if things don't go exactly the way Jay wants, then Jay's going to say, I don't know, I've been in Boston. I've been in Miami. I bounced around. I'm good. I'm good. It maybe he looks at the situation here and says, I don't want to go through another year of this because there's some things internally that I just don't agree with. Maybe that's what it is. You know, the Robert Sarver questions, and we'll hear from Spurge over at the Suns facility a little bit later in the show. The Robert Sarver story, I don't know if that's what prompted Jay Crowder to say, I don't want to be here. I can't imagine that would be the only reason. But this is a team where you've got an aging point guard, you've got a center who's saying all the right things, but they try to keep it together last year. And it just feels like they're teetering a little bit. Things are teetering just a little bit. Now, they've got some very talented guys. Mikal Bridges, time for him to just continue his ascent as to one of the most elite players defensively. Is it time for Cam Johnson to be out on the court more? And if you're going to trade Jay and just move on from it. But it's just a different feel as today is the first day of Suns training camp. I'm not sitting here saying, oh, this thing's going to be a train wreck. It's really interesting, actually. Like a year ago at this time, they're coming off of playing the Bucks in the finals, and we're all coming out of COVID, and things were just a very feel-good story. The investigation into Sarver was going, and before you know, it's about a year ago, and before you knew it, there was just a bunch of stuff that was happening and didn't feel quite right. They get into the playoffs, play an absolutely horrendous game, a game seven where Monty Williams didn't have his team ready to play, got out coached. I'm sure he's going to be asked about that today. So I'm not one of those that's just like, well, you know, that was last year. Every year is different. Like the Diamondbacks, they lost over the weekend again. Their bullpen burped it up again. If they had had just two quality guys on the back end of their bullpen, a little bit of luck, we would be talking about wild card baseball here in Arizona. But instead, I mean, the numbers, I've been doing a deep dive on it. I'm not ready to talk about it yet. But the numbers are just stunning how many games they were in and then the bullpen just crapped the bed. So there's that. All right. Josh Weinfuss on the other side, followed by Spurge at the Suns facility. He's going to step out for a couple minutes. And then John Wilner, things around the Pac-12, couple names to run up the flagpole with John, potential names and candidates for the Arizona State head football coaching job. We'll get into all that on this busy Monday. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. He is steering the ship right into the rocks or not. Not. I do that. And we're back with Josh Weinfuss and the Cardinals next. All right, Josh Weinfuss with us for a couple of minutes. ESPN, Cardinals reporter, insider, things going on around the Cardinals here to make sense of 1-2. Okay, make sense of 1-2.
Better than I expected. Honestly, really? I didn't think they'd beat the Raiders. I thought the Raiders were going to be a hard beat just because of Davante Adams and the Cardinals' lack of depth and I guess talent at cornerback. So that was a little bit. I mean, it was a surprise, right? I mean, I think if we go back real quick to last week, the Cardinals played very good in the second half, mostly because Kyler Murray had a fire lit under him. And the Raiders kind of lost that game as well. So anyone who says that the Cardinals just beat them in the second half, not true. The Raiders didn't just take their foot off the gas. They put their foot on the brake for whatever reason. So I was a little surprised by that. This week, though, I mean, I thought the Rams would beat them a little bit worse than they did. Mm-hmm. The Cardinals had opportunities, right? They had opportunities. I think that this is a somewhat good position for Arizona. You know, I thought that, like I said, I thought they'd be 0-3, 1-2 going into Charlotte. It's going to be rainy. It's going to be muddy. It's going to be messy. So that's up in the air. So I think, you know, it's an okay spot for them considering they don't have DeAndre Hopkins or three of their, you know, or Rondale Moore. Antoine Wesley's out. AJ Green just got hurt. You know, he didn't play the second half on Sunday in the loss to the Rams. But I think what we're seeing is that same old stuff that at the end of last year is carrying over to this year. You know, they can't carry over week to week, but they're carrying over season to season, and that's not a good thing.
Okay, let's parse through this just by position spot. And Kyler Murray, frustration, was there some of that after Sunday's loss to the Rams and looking ahead to Carolina? What's got to happen for him? Because, look, DeAndre's not walking through the door onto the field. And all these injuries, that's part of the life in the NFL. So who's to put the foot down and say, okay, we had to throw the ball 58 times because of X, Josh. And how do you fix that for Sunday against Carolina?
Well, you fix it by getting him moving in the first few minutes of the game, right? When they get the football, when the Cardinals get the football for the first time in Charlotte, whether it's storming or not, you need to get Kyler Murray moving. And I'm not talking about rolling out in a play action or even an option is going to work. You need a defense from the get-go to think that Kyler is going to make plays with his feet. Because when he doesn't, you know, the Cliff Kingsbury talked about the offense becoming one-dimensional when they get down by so much. Well, they're pretty much one-dimensional in a sense, if he's not running, right? They're a traditional offense. When he's running, they're not a traditional offense. They're a dynamic offense. So when you have Kyler moving, you know, whether it's vertical, whether it's horizontal, just get him on the move because he can make plays happen. And he said it's not as easy as that. Well, it is as easy as that when you call a couple of plays here and there. You don't need to, you know, go all out in the early on, but get him moving. And then you know, things can happen. The running game can get set up better. The passing game to get going. And all of a sudden, you're not in a position where you have to throw 52 times a game, whatever it is, and only produce 12 points. So to me, it seems like a simple fix. Obviously, it's a little more complex than that. But at the very foundation of this is Kyler Murray not moving. And I don't put that on him, right? He doesn't want to be the type of quarterback that has to run every single play. But this team needs him to move more in order to get going.
And this is a cliff issue then, from your view?
I think so. You know, I mean, because if you look at when push comes to shove, when the Cardinals' backs are up against the wall, Kyler Murray makes things happen with his feet, right? He takes the ball literally in his own hand, puts the team on his shoulders, and he goes. And he knows that. You know, in Las Vegas, there was that proverbial switch, that light bulb went off in his head. He's like, now's my time to make things happen. And I tried asking him after the game yesterday whether or not he feels that needs to happen earlier in the game. But the question got a little convoluted. He thought that's about something else. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to know if he, you know, why isn't he thinking that he needs to be the guy that takes his team on his shoulders from essentially their first snap? And why isn't that happening? So, no, I do think this is a cliff issue. I think that he needs to start calling a better game early on. He likes to put all the blame on himself. Well, if you're going to put all the blame on yourself, you need to figure out a way to fix it as well.
James Conner, what do you make out of three games in with him?
I mean, it's tough to be a running back when you're down every single game, when you have to throw the ball. You know, you're using him a lot early to set the tone, which I think is the right move. But when you're down by, you know, 10 or in Vegas, 20, Kansas City, you're down 16. Like, you have to throw the ball. And as a running back, I don't want to say you're rendered useless, but you're not going to be used as much as you would be if it was a 23-23 game, or even if you're up and you need to run the clock, obviously. So he's not going to get the looks that he expects when they're trailing. So for him to become the effective playmaker and the guy who can kind of set the tone for this offense, the Cardinals need to either be in close games or they need to be in the lead, because Cliff is very quick to abandon the run when they're trailing, and rightfully so, because they need to catch up, and this team becomes a passing game. And that's what he means when he says that they become one-dimensional.
Josh Weinfuss covers the Cardinals for ESPN. He joins us for a few minutes. This is not all about, well, when DeAndre Hopkins comes off suspension, everything is going to be all right, flip the switch, and away we go. Or is it, from your view?
I don't think it's going to be that easy, right? I don't think it's going to happen that quickly. I do think it's going to get better. But we also don't know which DeAndre Hopkins we're going to see in Week 7 on Thursday Night Football against the Saints. It is interesting. We're starting to see the Cardinals lay crumbs throughout the weeks that are signaling that they're building their excuses, right? We didn't have this many guys. These guys are on IR. D-Hop's out. Kind of expected it. Didn't expect it this soon. But when you get DeAndre Hopkins back, it does change the complexion of an offense, right? He is, you know, that all-world type of talent. You're going to put him in your boundary X slot, which AJ Green was playing, and that's the guy closest close offense, it's a 1-3 split with receivers. When they go four wide, DeAndre will be that one. And it takes a defense. I mean, the defense has to pay attention to him. So when he comes back, he's going to draw a lot of attention, because if he doesn't, if he's one-on-one, Kyler's just going to throw it to him every single day, every single game, every single pass of every single game of every single day. But if a defense starts to shade his way, then you have more options. You're going to have, maybe Hollywood Brown. You do have Rondale Moore when he gets back. I'm not convinced that Antoine Wesley is a solution to this offense, but he's a big target. He's a guy who can go up and get some balls. He's going to have a big role when he comes back. So I do think DeAndre Hopkins is going to fix this. I don't know if he's going to be the end-all, be-all answer.
Flip it around on the defensive side of the football. Three games in, what do you look at most, Josh, and say, what is going on here? Or it's really not that bad, Brad.
So there are three areas I look at. I'm kind of thinking, what's happening and when is this going to get fixed? I think the pass rush is going to be an issue this season. I think the interior inside linebackers are going to continue to be an issue. I mean, I know Zaven Collins, you know, got hurt, his shoulder got, you know, was injured yesterday, but there are times when you don't have either of your two first round inside linebackers on the field, and that's not good, right? That's a that's an organizational failure. If you are drafting inside linebackers and back-to-back first rounds and neither of them are on the field at the same time, just put one on, right? You to me, you need to have at least one on, and then cornerback. Those three positions need depth. They need improvement immediately. And I think that if they don't go out and bolster those positions, then this could be a very long season on defense. And we've already seen, you know, the run defense hasn't been great. The pass rush, they're getting there. They're just not able to get guys down because quarterbacks, I think quarterback play around the league is so good now that they know how not to get sacked. Is really what it comes down to. They're not holding the ball. They're getting the ball out the very last second. That happened with Mahomes. And they're playing good quarterbacks, right? They played Mahomes, Derek Carr, and then Matthew Stafford in three straight weeks. That's a tough start, right? And those guys know how not to get sacked. So the interior pass rush, I've been impressed with. Zach Allen, J.J. Watt, even Marcus Golden, guys like that. They're getting the pressure. They're getting push. They're getting to the quarterback. They're just not able to get these guys down, which as of now, I'm not worried about. I think it's more the edge rush. I think Marcus Golden needs to be a little bit better if he can be. But the problem is that, you know, you have guys like Dennis Gardick, Devon Kennard coming off the other side. That just doesn't scare offensive lines that much. So you're seeing a lot more attention being put on Marcus Golden, and that's going to make life a little tough.
Before I get you out of here, this Sunday at Carolina, supposed to be nasty conditions. What do you expect out of this team?
I don't know. I don't know how they play in adversity, right? I mean, there's a 90% chance of rain on Saturday. It's supposed to be a tropical storm, if not a hurricane, hitting, you know, Charlotte. I don't know. They're going to have to run the ball a lot. And I think that Kyler is going to have to be a major part of this game plan. Him and James Conner are going to have to just run the daylights out of the ball, keep it on the ground. And it's going to be muddy. It's going to be gross. It might be like Chicago week one. Like, I do think that if Cliff can kind of stop trying to get the passing game going, sometimes he does try to be too cute. There's no doubt about it. If he can just get the ball in those guys' hands and let them just pound the ball, and if they don't get behind, I think they'll be fine.
Appreciate your time and your insight as always. Stay safe. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
And we're back with more after this timeout. All right, as promised, Spurge is with us. Jordan Spurgeon is man about town today. He is over at the Suns. It is Phoenix Suns Media Day, the start of a big, big season for the Suns, obviously with Robert Sarver out, Jay Crowder not wanting to be here. Man, there's a lot going on. What is the vibe like there this morning at the Suns facility?
Yeah, the vibe right now, definitely the two pressers I've sat in so far as we're talking has been James Jones, Monty Williams, in the beginning of Chris Paul, and it's about 75% talk about Robert Sarver investigation, kind of what their emotions were like, how Monty had talked with the players, how Chris Paul had talked with Adam Silver. So they're really kind of giving us some insight into how that played out from their eyes. We've all seen how we've reacted in the media and fan perspective, a little bit of tweets from guys like Chris Paul, but now we're seeing their perspective, and that's been the big thing. Monty talked a little bit about chopping trees and spending his summer a little differently than he had hoped to spend it after the game against the Mavericks in Game 7. But a little bit of that, and I expect there'll be some other things coming down the pipeline the rest of the day.
What did James Jones or Monty say about Sarver that was interesting to you, Spurge?
I think the biggest thing that was interesting to me was they talked about how when they read the reports, they were still very shocked. James Jones specifically touched on the fact that it hasn't been his experience, but he's very apologetic to everyone that did experience the things that Robert Sarver had put down the pipeline. You know, is that his perspective and his lens on how he's interacted with them over the years is a lot different than how those people did. And he knows that it was the right move for him to try to sell the team. He's very glad that it is setting a precedent and letting people know that when they do undergo those things, that the team does care and that the league wants to make sure that they're not going to allow that to happen. So even though he was never experiencing some of that stuff that Sarver was saying, personally, he feels extremely bad for everybody that has gone through it and hopes that they can get some closure and wants to make sure that while it's back to basketball, they're not going to just move on and just forget about everything that's happened. They're going to make sure they're doing their part to take care of everybody.
Spurge is with us for a couple of minutes. Jordan Spurgeon at the Suns facility. Today is media day. Yep, at the end of September, Sun season is now here for a couple of minutes. All right, Jay Crowder, anything that they've said early on, they being Monty or James, or even Chris Paul, about Jay Crowder wanting out of the Suns?
Yeah, mostly so far. I mean, they're keeping it strictly business. They weren't going to get into any of the conversations they've had with Jay over the last few weeks. But they just really wanted to harp on that it wasn't something that they saw coming at the end of last season. Even when asked about Cam Johnson, Monty Williams just kind of laughed and said, we'll see about his role as a starter. I think we all expect him to be the starter, and that's probably why this move was made. But it wasn't specifically addressed as to why or why not Jay wanted out. They just said it's the business of basketball. They talked to all the guys about the business of basketball, and they want to make sure that guys understand it. And so far, there doesn't seem to be any sort of bad taste in anyone's mouth on either side, but they're not really getting into the specifics of why this is happening.
Okay, what are you expecting the rest of this day? Is it just going to be rinse, repeat, Sarver no longer here, selling Jay Crowder, or there's some players that you're very interested to hear what they have to say on some other topics?
Yeah, like I said before, I think it's going to stay about 70-75% that, but there's other things to talk about. I know I saw Devin Booker's traveled like half the world in his offseason. I think that's something I'm very curious about. They got the new jerseys they unveiled today, which, of course, perfect timing to have that for media day. Chris Paul was rocking it. So I know there'll be questions about that. And I think there'll be a little bit of X's and O's. Like, people were asking about DeAndre Ayton working on more of his offensive game, maybe being more of that third option on a consistent basis offensively for them. It seems like that's something that people want to focus on. So we'll see if that gets brought up. But I don't think it's going to be one of those media days where it's a ton of fun, just because the Sarver stuff is what's weighing heavy over everybody. And I think everyone wants to hear what the players now have to say. But I think as we get to some more of the players, we'll hear about their summers a little more. So it's kind of like school. What'd you do on the first day back of school? What'd you do during summer? I think we'll get some more of that. But that's probably about it.
That's good stuff, though. I'll let you go back in. Good work there. There's Jordan Spurgeon at the Suns facility, and we're back with John Wilner next. John Wilner with us now. Wilner Hotline. Of course, you can catch his content on the website. You can follow him on social media, Wilner Hotline. The Canzano Wilner podcast is sweeping the nation. Right, John?
Sure. Well, I'll take sweeping.
There you go. sweeping could be in Colorado or coaching change could happen, right? Speaking of brooms. And
next on the list, it seems like, right, if you're doing a hot seat ranking, Carl Durrell would clearly be number one. And a unanimous number one at this point. With Herm Edwards out, Durrell is definitely on the hottest seat.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. What has been the early reaction around the conference with Arizona State putting Sean Aguano in place? There's some interesting names I want to run by you in a second, but just the overall feel of Sean Aguano.
You know, it's there isn't much reaction other than everybody was surprised that they fired Herm when they did, because it's like, well, why did you wait till the season began? Why didn't you do it, you know, last winter or the previous summer? And now it's just, well, we'll see what they do. We'll see what happens with the NCAA investigation. That's the thing. I mean, the NCAA is going to partly determine what their candidate pool looks like. I don't think anybody gives Sean a chance to get the job permanently. You know, they've got a really tough next 2 weeks, so this team could very well be 1-5 when they go into their break.
A lot of names that are floating around this job in the very early going, and I don't like to just throw names against the wall unless they come from some people whose opinions I look at and say, well, if that person is running this name up the flagpole, so I'm going to run Justin Wilcox's name up the flagpole too. John, you're there in the Bay Area. He's done a very good job, in my opinion, in a tough, tough situation. He didn't go after Oregon, or maybe he did. Would Justin Wilcox be a name to look at in Tempe? Because it's a name I'm hearing down here.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing he would leave Cal for ASU. He coached at Cal. He really fits very well with what Cal means as an institution. Mm-hmm. He's comfortable there. I have a hard time seeing him, although I think he's a very good coach, very good coach. I don't know that the fit is quite as good for him. You know, he did talk to Oregon. That's his alma mater. Mm-hmm. And I believe Washington pursued him as well. And he coached at Washington under Chris Peterson, or under Steve Sarkisian. But he's kind of a Northwest guy. I don't quite see it. If I'm ASU, I would absolutely make that call, but I'm not sure that I see him making that jump.
Is Cal a better job than Arizona State?
No.
ASU? Yeah. And I think you look at it from that standpoint and say, where's the better job?
You could, but he turned out Oregon. I mean, I believe he could have had the Oregon job. I believe he could have had or pursued the Washington job, and he didn't for various reasons. He's really into, what works with institutionally, academically, the philosophy of the school. Now, maybe ASU gets fortunate, and he gets so frustrated with the way things are going at Cal that he says, you know what, I just need to get out of here. And ASU happens to be the open job at that time, perhaps. But I have a harder time seeing him do that.
John Woolner with us for a couple of minutes. Okay, let's bounce around the conference because we're now quarter pole through the season. Is UCLA real or fake? Is this Friday night where we're going to find out? They've had this schedule, and not all their own fault with Michigan pulling out, but what do you make out of UCLA? Because undefeated, and it looks like on the surface they're rolling, and then you peel back and say, well, I haven't played anybody.
I mean, they barely beat South Alabama, right? That's the best team they've played in South Alabama, and it was a one-point game at the Rose Bowl. So we don't know. I think they're pretty good. And I think they'll be ready for the Huskies. So we'll find out a lot more Friday night, right? I mean, they could have played Michigan, but Michigan backed out of that series. And then they happened to just draw Colorado as their first conference game, and Colorado's the worst team. So It is a super soft 4-0, but I think they're pretty good. I would not be surprised at all if they beat the Huskies.
As you're sitting here now and we've gone through this, Oregon is pushed very hard by Washington State, and the Oregon State USC game was terrific. Who's the best team in the conference today as we're sitting here chopping this up, John?
We don't know. And if for the Pac-12, that's good. We don't know. And it could be any number of teams. This is the first time in years that the Pac-12 has had four teams in the top 15 at any point in the season, right? I think it's been since the end of the 2016 season. And so we don't know. Is it Oregon? Is it Washington, SC, Utah? If I were to bet, I'd still put my money on Utah. I think they're the most complete team because there's, you can pick some holes in the others a little bit, but Utah, they've done it. They got a lot of key players back. I would pick Utah, but the fact is, we don't know. And this is the best the Pac-12 has been competitively in many years at the top of the conference. There are four teams in the top 15. And that doesn't even include UCLA, which is unranked, Washington State, which won at Wisconsin, and Oregon State. So there's seven teams. You can make a case Cal is eight. There are eight good teams.
Heisman Trophy candidates at the quarter pole of the season within the conference. There's more than one, right?
There's more than one right now. Yeah, I would agree. Caleb Williams, certainly. And Michael Penix Jr., the Washington quarterback, certainly is getting some support. Whether he hangs in there or not, I don't know. We need to get through a couple more weeks to see if he's legit. But yeah, he's been playing great. He is certainly benefiting from playing for head coach Kalen DeBoer, who he played for in Indiana. DeBoer was Indiana's offensive coordinator for a couple of years in like 2018, 2019, and when Penix was a young player. So he's very comfortable in that system. DeBoer's a very good offensive coach. But the Huskies, we talk about UCLA not being proven. The Huskies haven't played a road game yet. So this will be their first road game. And we saw Michigan State look really good. That looked like a great win for Washington. Michigan State got pounded by Minnesota on Saturday. So now you start to wonder, well, is Michigan State really any good at all?
The idea of the transfer portal, and I think small sample size, and you mentioned it a little bit there, a quarterback coming along with his coach or a coordinator from one conference to the next, the Pac-12 has seen that benefit at Washington State too. And this to me feels like it's going to be a trend. If we're going to go get said quarterback who's had success at said smaller level, then let's go get that guy that worked with him and let's use that as a blueprint. Am I making too much out of this?
No, I think that's what a lot of schools are doing, not just in the Pac-12, but everywhere. You hire either the offensive coordinator or the head coach who's got a really good quarterback in the transfer portal. So that's exactly what the Cougars did, right? They hired Eric Morris, who was the head coach at Incarnate Word, and he's a Mike Leach disciple. He coached at Washington State, and he's got at Incarnate Word this terrific, talented quarterback, Cam Ward. So you hire Morris as your play caller, and here comes Ward. You hire Lincoln Riley, here comes Caleb Williams. You hire Lincoln DeBoer. Oh, it just so happens Michael Penix is going to end up leaving Indiana. I think we're going to see that a lot. And, you know, ASU could be thinking about that a little bit, maybe when they decide which head coach to hire. I mean, they've got Emory Jones, but, you know, if there's a terrific quarterback in the transfer portal, you may want to think about his head coach or his play caller.
All right, let's get into Arizona State in Arizona. What a dreadful, just dreadful Saturday for both of them. I thought Arizona played pretty well in the first half at Cal and then just looked like they got run over like a bug on the I-10 going to Tucson. And ASU was never really in the game. Sean tried with the best he's got. Jones was, I don't know if he could hit the broadside of a barn the way that he was throwing the ball over the field. In front of family and friends, there was nobody at that game. They're introducing fans before the game rather than the players, John. That's how small the crowd was. So what do you make out of ASU and U of A now as we go from September to October?
Well, I mean, ASU's got big trouble, right? And a lot of it's because of the schedule. You know, you part ways. I don't know how we're going to term it here with Herm Edwards, but you part ways with your head coach right before your play in Utah, USC and Washington. That's a tough deal for anybody, right? I mean, but ASU, they're reaping what you sow. You know, that's the bottom line. The administration put the program in this position, and there's nobody to blame except the administration here. If you're an ASU fan, it's going to be a tough season for them. There's no question about it. Arizona, you don't see Cal score 49 points against very many conference opponents. It hadn't happened in like 5 years. They are not built to score 49 points the way some teams are, right? Cal is a pro-style offense. They are built to win games 27-20, right? The fact that Arizona allowed 49 points, 28 of them after halftime, that is not a good look for Arizona. Johnny Nansen, their new defensive coordinator, he has got to reset that situation there. They've got Colorado this week, so that's, you know, it's almost like playing a scrimmage. And then they got Oregon and Washington back to back. So they have got to fix that quickly or the season's going to spiral out of control because they're not that good offensively, right? They're better, right, but they're not that good. And they can't be giving up 35, 40 points and expect to get into a bowl game.
Game you're most looking forward to this weekend?
Well, there are two. One is Friday. I mean, the Washington-UCLA game is going to be interesting for both fronts, right? UCLA's first good opponent and Washington's first road game. Plus the Friday night thing, you never quite know. It's tough on the road team.
Right.
Can't imagine the Rose Bowl is going to be full, right? 6-7 o'clock on a Friday. Nobody's going to be able to get there. And then Saturday, I'm actually looking forward to Oregon State, Utah, because Oregon State won last year in Corvallis. And they're coming off that really tough loss to SC. So are they able to bounce back? If Oregon State can go in there and win, I think that shows us they are a legit contender. But I suspect the Beavers are in for big trouble here, and Utah is going to say, hey, we're still the bully on the block.
And that's a name, Jonathan Smith, that is down here as well in Tempe for the ASU job.
Yeah,
I'm looking at that saying, why would he come here? What can they offer that Oregon State can't, except if it's stability within the conference? But in reading you, that's really not an issue as we sit here today. It's not like the Beavers are going to be kicked to the curb. What do you make out of his name in here?
Well, I mean, if I'm ASU, he would be, I don't know, probably one of the first calls I made. Absolutely. The guy is a phenomenal coach. He went to Oregon State. There's certainly a lot of loyalty. They gave him his first head coaching job. He's an alum. There's a huge loyalty factor there. And he may just be real comfortable there. But you got to make that call if you're Arizona State. He's from Southern California. So, you know, I don't know that he's necessarily like a Northwest guy, even though he spent most of his adult life there. Phenomenal coach. But like Justin Wilcox, I mean, and anybody else that they're going to go after that's a sitting head coach at the Power 5 level, you don't know what you're getting into, right? I mean, a big part of the issue with ASU is when are they going to get the notice of allegations from the NCAA and how bad is it going to be? If they go into, you know, the season ends the last Saturday in November or Friday, whenever the Territorial Cup is. they finish up with that and they get into their head coaching search hard at that point. If they haven't heard from the NCAA, a lot of people are going to be like, you know, no thanks, right? I'm not jumping into this when I don't know what the whether there's going to be a 2-year bowl ban or what the scholarship losses are going to be. They need to hear from the NCAA as soon as possible to get clarity for their coaching search.
That's John Wilner, and you can find all of John's content on the website. And, of course, give John a follow on his social media handles. Listen to the Canzano-Wilner podcast. John, we'll see you next week.
Thanks very much, Brett.